Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. Well, today we are focusing on mind power via the world of science, R&D, discovery, exploration, whatever word you would feel most comfortable describing it as. My guest today is Mr. Stanton Friedman, and of course so many of you listening are familiar with him because he has, well, been involved in so many discussions regarding UFOs, but Stanton's done something different. He has put out a book called Science Was Wrong. Welcome, Stanton, to the show.
Glad to be on. I must say now, that book was co-authored with Kathleen Martin, and we each did 7 of the 14 chapters. So it's not my work, it's our work.
Wonderful. I'm so glad you corrected me on that, because that is true. And I'm glad you mentioned it. I was going to, but that's significant. This is a fascinating book, because you're not dealing with the subject matter that you normally cover. And, of course, you've got quite a background as a nuclear physicist, and you have just been involved with so much with science through the years. And you're not afraid to throw a little bit of, what do I want to call, shrapnel, verbal shrapnel,
okay,
when it's necessary.
Why not? I haven't shot anybody yet, but I am no stranger to calling. I'm no stranger to calling a spade a spade.
That's correct. And many times, it just is very disconcerting. Why did you and Kathleen decide to take on this kind of subject, which would cause both of you to do so much investigative research about positives and negatives in science from the past?
Well, because, you know, we'd previously captured the Betty and Barney Hill UFO experience,
mm-hmm.
and I had done Flying Saucers in Science and Top Secret Magic and Crash at Corona, all UFO-related stuff. And we constantly found, and still are finding, that the major objections come from smart people who say stupid things about stuff about which they know nothing but presume to be able to make a negative declaration. You know, there is no evidence for UFOs, et cetera. And in one area in particular that got me rolling was that a major objection to flying saucers is that you can't get here from there. But when I try to follow up on that, I find that the people who make that objection have no idea what they're talking about, know nothing about advanced propulsion system design. I mean, most of these guys are astronomers, and astronomers know a lot about the universe. They know nothing about aerospace engineering. I worked on nuclear rockets and fusion rockets and nuclear power plants for space. I worked in industry where the objective is not publish or perish, but get a job done, you know, make something work.
Mm-hmm.
And there is an enormous difference. And as we looked around to try to find the basis for the noisy negativists, if you will, we found constantly kept stumbling across these examples of objections by people who were smart, who didn't know what they were talking about, and whose objections stood in the way of progress and sometimes caused serious consequences such as death and stuff like that. The medical stories, several of the stories in the book are medical stories.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we need to understand that often these guys are full of wind. They know nothing about what they're talking about, but presume that they ought to because of their high and exalted status. And it seemed useful to set down a number of examples of this kind of stuff and, you know, proceed from there. Show people that there are consequences. Show people why the statements were wrong, usually out of ignorance and arrogance, which is a horrible combination,
mm-hmm.
Especially when it comes to medical stuff. You know, we know best, the fact that people are dying. Well, it doesn't matter. We know what we're doing here.
Mm-hmm.
And I found the aviation, you know, I'm old enough to remember when we didn't go as fast as the speed of sound, when people were using rather primitive techniques for communication by comparison to what we have now. I was fascinated by going through and saying, well, how come? Why did those guys say those stupid things? And doesn't anybody know? I mean, I guess what we're supposed to do is ignore the track record, especially of the astronomical community, with regard to their proclamations about mm-hmm. space travel, aviation travel, all these other things. And we need to make as much progress as we can, because my mantra, if you want to call it that, is that technological progress comes from doing things differently in an unpredictable way. The future is not an extrapolation of the past. You have to change how you do things. And unless we learn that lesson, we're going to lose out. Society will lose out. So it's not a trivial, you know, debating point.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that's important. And it's not just the personal stuff. I mean, let me give you one example. In the book, in my aviation chapter, Kathleen wrote the medical stories, which I found quite fascinating. We worked
mm-hmm.
together.
Very much so, yes. Mm-hmm.
In the book, I talk about Billy Mitchell. Now, most people have heard about Billy Mitchell. He was convicted of insubordination, court-martialed mm-hmm. in the military.
Right.
And, you know, when you start looking carefully at it, he fought in the First World War as a pilot. Aviation was beginning to be important, another good way of killing people and making progress on the battlefield. And after the war, he said that aviation is going to change everything. Among other things, we're going to be able to sink ships from the air with bombers.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, did that bring out the ha-ha. The Secretary of the Navy said he'd stand on any ship that Billy was going to bomb and not worry about it. And, you know, this was nonsense, obviously nonsense. Well, he was court-martialed. But to illustrate the complications, in 1941, November 29th, there was the Army-Navy football game, a major event every year back east. And in the program for the game, there was a picture of the USS Arizona, an enormous battleship. And the statement in the discussion with it said, nobody has ever sunk a battleship from the sky. Well, 8 days later was Pearl Harbor. And it just so happens the USS Arizona was sunk by Japanese bombers, and only 1,100 men died because of their unwillingness to take into account the fact that you could sink ships from the air.
Stanton, so, don't you, excuse me for interrupting you, but, you know, you brought out a very good point here. And that is that many people going into making these decisions, just by what you've said, there's so much in the way of politics that's involved.
Yes.
There is so much regarding economics. If we bring in a change like this, how many areas of industry are going to be affected? It's like electric cars today, or using engines that can use water to run on. None of the things that are really energy efficient that are being talked about today are new. They've been around for a long, long time. Mr. Ford was going, you know, he had come up with an alternative fuel, but gasoline was cheaper. And that became the hot thing, and here we've got an oil industry that is mega, mega.
Yeah.
What you're bringing out is so significant because it is the thinking, but it's not just the thinking, it is the economics of it, and it is the political positioning. What do we want to do? And it's not looking with the thinking process of how can this benefit in the bigger picture? Can you get the picture? A lot of people aren't capable of doing that. Would you agree?
Well, yeah, I would agree. And, you know, it's like the whole business about space travel. When two different English royal astronomers, and their present guy is no better, Lord Rees, have loudly proclaimed, well, one of them said specifically, it's utter bilge, space travel. He said that to Time magazine in 1956, a year before Sputnik went up. And he said, nobody will ever spend the money for it. What good would it do? Besides, what we really need is better astronomical tools. Now, the crazy thing is that the field of science which has benefited most from the space program is astronomy.
Very much, because
of our telescopes out there and all the satellites that are out there and the whole new ball game. Of course, we don't often talk about how wrong astronomers were before they had these tools. Everybody knows Mars has no water, the moon has no water, Venus is a tropical paradise. These were all baloney, frankly. But so space has become extraordinarily important to us. And, you know, remember the political shock of the Russians beating the United States into putting up a satellite. The U.S. could have done it. We had those good German scientists, plenty of technology, but we decided to let some aerospace company that had never fired a rocket go at the business of satellite production and have it blow up on the pad, which looked terrible. Do you realize what a loss of prestige the United States suffered because the Russians beat us into space? Not only once, first satellite, but first animal, first man, first trip around the moon? Boy, were we getting kicked around. And we spent all kinds of money to make up for the fact that we didn't do what we should have done when we could have done it. And, you know, people say, well, what good is space? You know, it turns out it's kind of nice to know where those hurricanes are going. It's kind of nice to have the GPS systems. It's good to know what the weather reports are and to be able to relay radio signals and to spy on your enemies to make sure they're not sneaking up on you and a whole bunch of other things. And you know what? Many of those uses weren't even thought of before we developed the technology. You know, the Navy had developed nuclear submarines, much opposed by the battleship boys. What do you need a submarine for? Give us more battleships. Well, once they had a submarine that they found could stay underwater for months, they suddenly realized, hey, we could put a rocket on that has a nuclear weapon at the end of a missile, and nobody will know where we are, so they dare not attack us because they know we can retaliate. But that aspect, the Polaris missile, wasn't thought of before they developed the nuclear technology to make the submarine work.
I don't mean to interrupt you here, but yes, I do, because I want you're making such good points. You're really making excellent points. But I would love to have you address cold fusion. I have had many people that are supposed scientists that say that this is absolutely ridiculous. It's not workable. There's no way that this is something that can be utilized. Here we have a science that has many different modalities to it. How would you address it? I know you've got a chapter in here on cold fusion.
Yeah, I do. And what I was disappointed to find is that, as might be expected, but as a nuclear guy, I was hoping it wasn't happening in my area, as might be expected, people were attacking the research without really paying attention to what was being done. Look, I worked on fusion propulsion systems for deep space travel way back in the early 60s, and my initial response when I heard the press release about cold fusion was, hey, that's a bunch of baloney. Hot fusion is what goes on. Hot fusion is what powers the sun and all the billions of other stars in the universe. So there's no question there's hot fusion, if you will. But the more I looked at it, and I did a lot of homework for the book, and finding that more and more experiments were verifying the early work. Did it work all the time? No. Did we have to learn a lot about what was going on? Of course we did. And one of the major fallacies among people who attack new technology is they compare the new with the very well-developed, very expensively developed old. You know, the first car didn't go as fast as the first train, as the existing trains.
Right.
That doesn't mean they wouldn't later on, but you see what I'm saying. It takes money. And I worked on major programs, and one of the things the ancient academics don't seem to understand is that it takes big money, big bucks, big time. Way back in 1968, I worked for General Electric Aircraft Nuclear Propulsion Department on the development of nuclear airplanes. We tested jet engines on nuclear power. There are a lot of problems. I worked in radiation shielding, and you really do want the shield not to be too heavy so you can get the airplane off the ground, of course. Anyway, that year we spent $100 million. We employed 3,500 people, 1,100 of them were engineers and scientists. So you don't do it with six professors and 12 grad students, in other words, which would be a big project at a university. And you do it, usually almost all our work was classified. Lockheed developed the stealth airplane. They only spent $10 billion over a 10-year period. So this failure to recognize that major developments come from major actions. An idea is one thing. Putting it into practice is quite another. And cold fusion hasn't had much money spent on it, but maybe people would like to know that Toyota, the Electric Power Research Institute, the United States Navy, are conducting research. And all the objections have been met that, there are no neutrons, or other things that come out of the fusion reaction. Well, people have measured them. But the people will say, don't bother me with the facts, my mind's made up. I know that that can't be real. Mm-hmm. And so I'm somebody who's opposed to that kind of research by proclamation. And, you know, it's kind of funny. The techniques used by the noisy negativists, the nasty naysayers, as I call them when I'm in a good mood, are the same no matter what the field. It doesn't matter whether you're studying ghosts or UFOs or paranormal phenomena. First, don't bother me with the facts. My mind's made up. Second, what the public doesn't know, I'm not going to tell them. Third, if you can't attack the data, attack the people. And fourth, do your research by proclamation. Investigation is too much trouble. And everywhere you turn, and it's one of the major themes of the book, is that's what was going on. Arrogance and ignorance as opposed to serious investigation and checking on the facts, doing one's homework. Now, I run across this always on the UFO scene. I talk about five large-scale scientific studies in my lectures, and after each one, I ask, how many people here have read this? And if I'm lucky, it's 1 or 2%. That helps keep down the number of guys who are going to give me a hard time because they'd have to admit, well, they hadn't studied any of the evidence, but if you haven't studied the evidence, you aren't entitled to a scientific opinion.
Well, I think that is a very good statement. And it's very difficult, I think, for many people to get into that thinking modality because you do need to learn how to do that. You need to have people that will come into your space and say, I want to know where you got your information from. And often they'll just say, oh, well, you know, everybody knows this.
Everybody knows it.
who is everybody? No, I want you to tell me who is everybody.
I've read it on the internet. Isn't that good enough?
No, it's not good enough. And that is what I think. I know how many years it has taken me to not hesitate to question people because there is so much, and I've said this on my show a number of times, there is so much indoctrination you're not supposed to question. You're not supposed to do this. The authorities know what's best, whoever said authority might be, or the term expert. And I can remember someone giving me a definition of an expert as someone who fizzles under pressure. So an expert is, you know, just exactly that sometimes. And we have all of these labels we put on people. And it is very difficult to wrap the mind about concepts, yet you have your sci-fi writers that sometimes are hundreds of years ahead of people because they are not limited, and they can put the concepts and ideas into writing, and it seems like eventually there is a seed that's planted in someone's mind, and then they grow into the awareness that they can be a scientist or be a researcher or someone that will take it, you know, to the next level. One of the things I really liked about the book, you have these wonderful sections on science, but you also have these sections on health, and I know you said Kathleen did a lot of this research, but I wanted to talk about the section on the methyl mercury in the food chain, because we as human beings, we really don't have very much control over the weather. And I listen to a lot of the stuff on global warming and everything else, and a lot of it's hoo-ha, because Mother Nature has a way of doing a lot of things. And through the centuries, there's been all kinds of shifts and changes that we had absolutely no control over. However, there is a contamination that because of the population of the Earth and because of new products we've made that have evolved. Let's address the methyl mercury in the food chain, because this is something I know so many of my listeners are very interested in.
Well, you know, most of us hear every once in a while somebody will say you shouldn't eat too much fish, you know, little things like that. And there has been discussion about what limits should be set on the amount of mercury that can be emitted from coal-fired power plants, because coal has a certain amount of mercury in it.
Mm-hmm.
And some people say, well, we should set a very high limit because, after all, it isn't really a problem and it would cost too much. And others say, hey, we're talking about people's lives. And what happened in Miyamoto in Japan, a company there was using mercury in their processing and dumping the residue in the water. And eventually the levels got quite high, and it contaminated the fish. And then the cats ate the fish, and they died. And then pretty soon it was the children. And meanwhile, when the people protested, the company, which was in bed with the city administration, said, oh, no, it has nothing to do with us. That's from other sources, from, you know, we're innocent. We're innocent. That's the byword of the evildoers, if you will. And it took an enormous amount of time, money, and effort to establish that they weren't innocent and that people died. They paid the price for this failure to look at the facts and the data and to be aware of all the information that was available from other places. And there are places in the United States and that have excess mercury levels. And mercury is one thing. It's the organic mercury that gets into humans and fish and other living things. And it increases its level as you go up the food chain. So that big old fish, which ate all those smaller fish, has a higher level than the smaller fish does. And so there is a lesson to be learned here, to pay attention. Fortunately, in the United States, we do have the center in Atlanta, the Contagious Disease Center, whatever you want to call it. It's got a couple of different names, which pays attention. They're the ones who first noted the AIDS epidemic, because there were three or four cases of very peculiar symptoms. And they kept tabs on it, and they kept looking around, and they realized what the common factor was, and they raised a fuss. One of the things that happens here is that, you know, we're all aware of sort of acute danger. You know, somebody shoots an arrow and it hits you in the body, you're in trouble right now.
Mm-hmm.
But there are many things you can ingest that will only do damage over a long period of time. And meanwhile, in the case of AIDS, you may have infected somebody else, and they don't know it, and you don't know it, and so somebody's got to be paying attention. And there's a chapter in the book about the hemophilia holocaust.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
10,000 American hemophiliacs were made HIV positive by transfusions that shouldn't have been administered. They were bulk processed from thousands of units of blood to produce a strong clotting factor, and there were serious questions raised. But the doctor said, chances one in a million that you're going to get anything, AIDS, through the blood supply. Keep doing what you've been doing. And so people did. 10,000. And the only thing that saved many of those people was that treatments were developed, which at least made it a chronic disease as opposed to a lethal disease. But that was all needless. The Germans had already established that heat treatment of factor would get rid of viruses. But the companies here said, hey, that costs too much money, too much trouble. We don't want to do that. They were wrong, flat out wrong. And actually, there were people in Europe and in Japan that got put in jail for insisting on, you know, let's keep using that transfusion product. At one point, incidentally, several European countries refused to import product from the United States because they had more sense.
Mm-hmm.
But meanwhile, what happens to the guy who's on the other end, who doesn't know that what he's doing, which is supposed to be saving his health, is going to kill him. Mm-hmm. And so we need to be aware of this. It's not just mercury. It's not just HIV. There are other things around. And, you know, certain drugs have been shown to cause more damage than good over a period of time. But nobody wants to hear that because these are profit-making drugs, you know?
Well, I think
it isn't proven yet.
I think of one gentleman, and I was just reviewing his materials. His wife is going to be my guest. He had been put through with certain kind of medication. He had had some cancer, and they gave him radiation treatments and other things. And unknown to him was the treatments that they gave him actually caused horrific situations in his, throughout his body system. He ended up with blood clots in his stomach. So this is an example where we don't know, and he said the cure was killing him. And it had been causing him pain almost all of his life. And you look at this, and again, I want to come full circle to what we said a moment ago, and that is we have to trust ourselves. We have to learn how to pay attention and not come from a positioning of fear, but be willing to educate ourselves and to stand up to thinking, wait a minute, who's making the statements? Why are the statements being made? What are the facts behind them? What would you say, Stanton, to the people who are listening today and they think, you know, I'm just so busy with my family and I'm working hard, I've got a job, I'm on the go all the time. What would you recommend to the individual listening who says, how am I going to know the difference? I thought I could trust the news sources. How do I discern fact from fiction?
Well, it's not easy. You got to educate yourself, and you got to ask questions. Let me give you an example. There were several articles saying ginkgo biloba is of no use in memory enhancement.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to read four different articles before I got to what dose were they using. And it was only 275 milligrams per day, and I know people who use three or four times that. And normally when you test a drug, and this isn't a drug, but it's a herbal medication, whatever you want to call it.
Are you there, Stanton?
You there?
Yes, uh-huh.
Yeah, okay, I don't know what's going on there. You normally test several different levels of a drug to determine both effectiveness and side effects. In other words, 20 milligrams, 60 milligrams, 100 milligrams. If nobody gets sick on any of those, you're in pretty good shape. If nobody gets well on the lower dose, but 40% get well on the next dose and 80% get well on the next one, you've learned something. Mm-hmm. Obviously, people are all different, but at least you've got some guidance. But it appears that that article was written by somebody whose goal was, maybe working for the drug industry, to keep people away from something that was cheap and inexpensive and might work instead of some elaborate, expensive treatment. That's something to take into account. So you got to ask for specifics. There was a study, cholestyramine, we should all take it, and we will eliminate heart disease. When I used to do a radio science commentary, when I read the article, they way overstated the benefits, and you had to look toward the end of the article to find out, oh, the people on the drug, A, were people who had a high risk of heart disease in the first place, so doing some good for them didn't mean it would do good for everybody. Not everybody should take insulin, for example, just because it benefits people with diabetes. But secondly, there was a higher level of stomach cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know that I want to trade heart disease for stomach cancer.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But you've got to ask those questions.
That is what I just love the commercials on television that promote all these drugs, sleeping things and all this stuff, and then they give you all of the side effects. And I think if someone listens to the side effects, you're going to say, you have got to be kidding. And when you really look at a lot of things, in today's world, our world on many levels has a very high sophistication to it, which I appreciate in many, many ways. At the same time, though all of these things have evolved, there also have been the realizations, just like with the mercury, with the chemicals that have been developed, that there is a lack of understanding that this stuff doesn't break down. You can have a piece of plastic that'll float in the ocean for 5,000 years, and it may never break down. I mean, it might, but it may never break down because there aren't the proper components to do that. We have spots in the ocean where they have tons of debris that have been coming in from all over the world. All of these things are going on, and when they are mentioned, it's like, well, we'll just ignore it. Well, our planet is getting smaller because we've got more and more population, because we can communicate so readily. Look at the show we're doing today, and it goes around the world. You have all of these things that are compressing, compacting our environment, and you can't continue if you want to, but to survive, the human race is going to have to wake up, and a lot of people, if they get smart, if they really want to be wealthy, they can do a lot of good. Instead of creating the negation, they can say, let's do something that's going to make a difference, and just go ahead and do it.
Well, I'm all for it. That's what I'm trying to do with Science Was Wrong, alert people to the fact that they've got brains, that there are questions I can ask. There is data to show that people have made false claims in the past and probably are still doing so. There is a chapter on UFOs for those who wonder, and Kathleen wrote a great chapter on UFO abductions and paranormal, so-called paranormal phenomena. Loads of experiments which validated, but the big shots, the ancient academics, want to ignore them. And, you know, it's like when I've appeared on Larry King, there's always got to be a nasty, noisy negativist. Bill Nye, the science guy whose purpose is to deny. He doesn't know anything about UFOs, but says it's all baloney. And I've debated a couple of these people and have won all the debates I've been in because they start off ignorant. They don't think they need to do any homework. I'm saying you got to do homework, especially if you're going to pose as an expert.
That's for sure. Well, Stanton, this has been a delight, as always. Your book is fascinating, and like I told you on the air, I'm sharing it with my husband and a number of other people, some of whom are scientists, and it's really fun to have conversations with them. And keep up doing what you're doing, because I think that the challenges are important. Now, Stanton, what is your website that people can go to for up-to-date information on what you're
doing? It's very easy, www.stantonfriedman, that's FRIEDMAN.com. Lists all the books, shows you how you can get them with signatures from both Kathleen and myself. There's some interesting articles. A long one is Government UFO Lies, because there's a lot of them. But the website, I mean, the book is available, of course, through Barnes & Noble and Amazon and, you know, the big shots. But if they get it from us, they get the signatures, which they don't from the big companies. But we're also looking for stories from people who may know something that they've never had anybody they were could believe they could talk to, say, about the government cover-up. There's a big press conference on Monday, the 27th of September, about nukes and UFOs, which ought to shock a lot of people. Looks like the aliens are paying attention to us nasty, noisy nuclear phobes, if you will. We hate nuclear energy, but we want to use it against people if they threaten us.
Isn't that amazing? Stanton, your website, Stanton Friedman, FRIEDMAN, is the website to go to. Check it out. You've got a lot of interesting material. And if you want to learn how to employ verbal shrapnel to challenge other people's thinking, remember, I said verbal, and it's not a bad thing to do. Debates are good. It's good to challenge. You may learn something. Stanton, thank you again for being my guest.
My pleasure, Donna.
It's a delight. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sivo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sivo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. I'm delighted that you're with me today. If you want to call in and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, here is the worldwide toll-free number you can call in to. The number is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Well, it's happening tomorrow. I'm going to be at the Emerald Spiral Expo for those of you in the state of Washington. This is a wonderful event. It's always such a pleasure to be a part of this activity. It has been an event that's been going on for 39 years. It is the oldest running psychic expo of its type, and it was originally the Boeing Parapsychology Expo, and now it is the Emerald Spiral Expo. So this is a wonderful group of people tomorrow from 9 until 5. I and a number of others, almost 100 vendors, are going to be there. And we'll have everything that you can imagine. There's jewelry, there's stones, there's classes that's going to be going on. There's going to be a panel talking about intuitive children. I'm going to be doing many readings for people. I'm also going to have an abundance of books. I'm in the process of packing up a whole bunch of them. So if you can, come on out. Admission is free, and it's a wonderful event for the entire family. Kids come along with their parents. Good food, good people, good times. That's what you're going to have at the Emerald Spiral Expo. Now, if you want some more information about it, if you need directions, it's going to be held at the Kent Commons in Kent tomorrow morning, 9 to 5. Go to emeraldspiral.com, emeraldspiral.com, and you'll find out everything you need to know. Also, we have a special event coming up in Tacoma, Washington, and I'm very pleased to say that I know some of the people that are going to be participating in this. It's called an Evening of Mediumship. It's going to be held at the Blue Mouse Theater at 2611 North Proctor Street in Tacoma, Washington. It's going to be on Thursday, October the 7th from 7 until 9 p.m. And if you'd like information about this, call 253-503-3773. They'll tell you the tickets, the cost. There's all kinds of variables and prices, but it's an event where you're going to be meeting Michael Chain and some other individuals who are very talented, who are going to be sharing with you the experiences and talents that they have. So I hope that you will put that on your calendar. Again, an Evening of Mediumship, Thursday, October the 7th, 7 to 9 p.m. Donna Sivo here. Telephone number, if you want to call in and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, hey, just give me a buzz. I would be delighted to do that for you. It's one of my favorite things to do, 888-815-9756. Also, I'm enjoying the stories that you're sending me about your paranormal experiences. For those of you that have not submitted your story, the cutoff date is going to be January 1. I'd love to hear from you. It can be about a ghost experience, out of body. It doesn't make any difference. It's your experience. And the reason that I want to put this together is because there are so many people that are having experiences, and if they read your story, it might make a difference. So send it to me via email. Send it to Donna at Delphi, D-E-L-P-H-I, international.com, Donna at DelphiInternational.com, and I think you will just need to put in there your contact information. I want your story, and it's going to be going into a file so that I can add it to what is already being done. If you've had clairvoyant telepathic experiences with animals, I'd love to hear about that too. So anyway, call me if you'd like to chat today, 888-815-9756. Having Stanton on really stimulated a lot of thought, and this is a man who's not afraid to challenge, and it's something I think we all have to learn how to do. And I thought, how many times when we read science fiction stories, or maybe you'd watch Star Trek on television, or you'd read H.G. Wells, you know, Jules Verne, all of these things, and it's just, it can't possibly happen. Well, I've got news for you. It is happening. It has happened. And again, as I mentioned during the interview, those writing science fiction do not have the paradigms of limited thinking that other people have. So sometimes it plants a seed that somebody will carry forth. Well, remember those James Bond movies? They wrote about the different cars, the different things that go on. So much of that has been a stimulus, believe it or not, for actual development of spy tools. And I have a picture of one in front of me that absolutely is amazing. Now, is the concept new? Not at all. During the Second World War, dentists were employed for more than one reason, for the transporting of microchips, and they would implant them or do all kinds of things. Well, here is a spy tooth that I see, and I'm just absolutely amazed. I'm not quite sure what the material is. It looks sort of shiny, and also at the same time it looks clear. Well, the United Kingdom has a gentleman, James Auger. He's devised a new concept in secret communication. It's an audio tooth implant. Now, this is what they do. A surgeon implants a device into your tooth. The data is retrieved from a cell phone, a radio, or computer, and the vibration resonates through your jawbone to your inner ear bone, meaning that only you can hear the information. Now, that's out of Ripley's, believe it or not. It's true. It's not make-believe. This happens. So that just brings up a lot of thoughts, doesn't it? Why would we do that? How could it be done? Sci-fi movies. Ah, yes. Someone talked about it a long time ago. But also, now that we've got the spy equipment in our teeth taken care of, what about bionic fingers? Now, there's many people that have accidents. Maybe they're born with defects, and they need to have hands. Well, I have in front of me some information about a company from Scotland that has invented bionic fingers, which enable people, if they've lost a finger, to pick up a glass. You can use a knife and fork, all kinds of cutlery. You can even write with these bionic fingers. Now, these fingers are not inexpensive. They cost about $70,000, but they're directly controlled by the brain, because there's a special sensor that allows them to detect when they've closed around an object. Now, that's the positive side of technology. We're learning how to utilize the nerves and the brain, which the nerves are your pathway for communication, and the brain is that environment that is going to send and receive responses. This is incredible. Incredible advancement. And it is going to literally liberate so many people. But it's having the opportunity to know about it. I know of someone that had an accident with a horse. And this is a horse that she had been around, since it had been a colt. Something spooked the animal and spooked it badly. And she happened to be handling the harness, and the horse bit her finger off. And it was her forefinger. And he took off most of it. Now, this wasn't the animal's fault. She's been around horses most of her life. She was very, very aware of it. And she finally went in, and they saved the finger, and they stopped the bleeding. But she said, the people at the hospital I went to did not know how to do the reattachment. And then she learned about a hospital that would go ahead and take the finger that she had and redo it. Well, by the time, there was so much time that went on before they were able to do it, it really didn't take. But she learned about artificially connecting the finger with a certain process. And I haven't talked to her recently, but she went in for the surgery to see if she could be able to have a prosthesis with her finger, since the process that was rendered medically with the accident when it happened was not the proper one. See, it's keeping up with education. How do we do this? How do we bring people up to par with what can be done, with what can assist individuals? Well, a lot of it is research, and the internet can be a help, but sometimes we get so much information, it too can be a hindrance. So it's a good idea to talk and chat and communicate. So it's just all kinds of good stuff. By the way, we're going to take a break for just a minute. I got a recipe for chicken pot pie I think you're really going to like. So have that pad of paper and pen handy, and we'll be chatting. Give me a call if you want to, 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedros. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Enter the magical world of God's Kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown-red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. I want to tell you about the guests that are coming up next week. We have a fabulous lineup of people. There is a woman by the name of Florence Greenhorn who wrote a book called The Seen But Unheard Garden. Now, this is about plant communication. And her husband is going to be talking. She has passed away, but he had this story published, and I'm going to have him on Monday. So it's going to be delightful. And then Barb Rogers. This woman is an accomplished writer. She has been my guest before, but I was absolutely astonished at her book, If I Die Before I Wake. This is her personal story of dealing with alcoholism. It is unreal, absolutely amazing. Then on Wednesday, we're going to be talking with animals or talking about animals. We're going to talk about rescue dogs. Diane Pomerantz, who is a repeat guest, has come out with the most beautiful book. Holidays are coming up. This would make a great gift for an animal lover. Our Rescue Dogs Family Album. And then we're going to be talking ghosts. Yes, yes, yes. We're going to be talking about Weiser's Field Guide to Ghosts and Raymond Buckland, who is someone that's been on the show also before. And he is a historian, so he's going to have a lot to share. And then we're going to end up the week with a woman, Deb Ivanoff, and her daughter. And it's an interview about how to make more good stuff happen. And you know what makes this so special? Her daughter helped her write this book, and she's in her early teens now. And the two of them put together this wonderful publication. So we have got a great week, and I hope that you will join me. And we are just going to share right now, quickly, before we run out of time, a chicken pot pie recipe. Recipes like this are the type that are just wonderful when the temps start getting cooler. They're easy to make, and they just taste good. It's like cool weather food, and served with a salad, or a vegetable, whatever type you want. I love salads myself, it's great. And it can be taken to a potluck, a buffet. This is so easy. So let me give it to you. You're going to need 1.5 cups of milk. 1.5 cups of milk. You're going to need 1 can of condensed cream of chicken soup. 1 can of condensed cream of chicken soup, 1.5 pounds of boneless, skinless chicken thighs, and you want to cut them into chunks, about 1.5-inch pieces. And I throw in a little bit extra myself. That's just my bias. 2 teaspoons of dried marjoram, 2 teaspoons of dried marjoram, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 1 tablespoon of oil, 1 tablespoon of oil, an onion chopped, you're going to need about 1 cup of that, and you need 8 ounces of small red potatoes. Use whatever potato you want. I mean, just whatever you have handy. I think potatoes are potatoes. This is my bias. Red potatoes have a different texture and taste from Yukons and russets, so whatever's your favorite, you can put that in here. And then you want to have 4 carrots. You cut them into 1/4-inch thick slices, and about 4 cups of fresh broccoli. And if broccoli isn't your vegetable, you need 12 ounces of something that looks green. Use green beans, whatever you like. And then you're going to need a sheet, 1/2 of a 14.1-ounce package of refrigerated pie crust dough, and you want to cut that into 13 strips, about 3/4 inch wide, and then have an egg, room temperature, on the side, and just beat that real quickly for a couple of seconds. This is how easy this is. You want to preheat your oven to about 400 degrees, and you want to have about a 2-2.5-quart baking dish, and you want to spray that with a cooking spray. And I would say bigger is better, because for some reason, I don't know why, but my stuff always bubbles over. So if you don't want to have your oven dirty, put a piece of foil underneath it. You want to preheat your oven, like I said, to 400 degrees. You want to whisk together your milk and your soup, put that to the side. You want your chicken, you want to sprinkle it with your spice, marjoram, and your salt. And then you want, in a large nonstick skillet, you want to heat your oil over a medium-high heat, add your chicken and onion, and cook them until they're brown. 10 minutes, that's all it's going to take. Pop in your potatoes, your carrots, and your soup mixture, bring it to a boil and cover it, and you want to cook it until the chicken is no longer pink. And that's going to be maybe about 15, 20 minutes. And your vegetables are going to be still firm. You don't want them soggy, so that they just blend into the background of the soup. What you want to do is have the vegetables a little bit firm. And your broccoli, if you're going to use broccoli, if you're going to use pea pods, add them at the last minute, and then transfer it into your baking dish. Put your dough strips over the filling in a lattice pattern. Brush the dough with the egg. Place it on a jelly roll pan. I like foil. That's lighter. And then bake 20, 25 minutes, and it's good stuff. You can use sausage. You can use pork. You can use beef with this. Believe it or not. Mix it, max it. Have a great time. We're out of time. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Have a fabulous weekend. See you at the Emerald Spiral Extra tomorrow. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.